Hi, Robert hier. Dieser Podcast wird euch präsentiert von der Hannover Messe. Wir sagen vielen herzlichen Dank an die Kollegen in Hannover und jetzt geht's los. Robotik in der Industrie. Der Podcast mit Helmut Schmidt und Robert Weber. Hello everybody and welcome to a new episode of our robotics podcast. My name is Robert and it's a pleasure to talk to Helmut in Munich. Hello Helmut.
Hello, pleasure meeting you.
We are back with Calling America and our correspondent Stu Shepherd is back. Stu, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be back. Nice to see you guys again.
How are you, Stu? It's been a long time.
Doing well. Yeah, it's been a couple of quarters, it feels like, but I don't think it's been that long. And it's wintertime. Everything seems longer in the winter.
Yeah, but a lot happened, right? So how's the U.S. market doing?
Well, the U.S. market is still troubled. Since the elections, a lot of people thought there would be a big upswing in business downstream from the election and the placement of the Trump administration, somewhat like there was 4 years ago. But actually, the opposite is true. There's more indecision and more controversy with his second term that's come in that's caused a lot of people to, you know, maybe put their investments on the sidelines for a bit to see what happens if the smoke clears or, you know, what embargoes and what things will happen next.
But it's not a good situation for the robotics, right?
It's still very difficult. So the interesting thing is we've got more viable solutions that are proven. We've got fantastic data about their performance, but people are scared to make changes. So when they're fearful of change or fearful of their business, they tend to park their money on the sidelines, even though, frankly, robotic investments are some of the best returns in the market you can possibly get and much lower risk than investing in the stock market or some of the other markets that are out there.
There was a boom in the last year. We talked a little bit. You were skeptical about this boom. Is the boom over?
The boom really never got a lot of energy behind it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there was certainly an increase, and the numbers were pretty good. But year over year, the market in North America particularly was somewhat flat. In other markets in the world, it was down even a little bit. But the markets being flat were an interesting thing. Automotive is typically a heavy driver of automation purchases in North America, particularly. And last year, the automotive didn't invest that heavy. They kind of waited because, you know, they backed off their investment in EV manufacturing to focus on just keeping the businesses going. But material handling continued to grow in places like warehouse and food and beverage and other places where material handling is important and labor continues to be an issue.
Helmut, you can compare the situation with Germany and Europe, right? So it's nearly, I would say, the same situation.
I would say it's quite similar. So for example, if you see what are numbers on Fanuc, Universal Robots, KUKA, but also ABB for robotic arms on the one hand side. But on the other side, 2 weeks ago, we just had Logimat. This is exactly what you just mentioned on material handling, logistic processes. So the fair itself, on the one hand side, was heavily visited, had a lot of interesting, many new robotics, mobile robotics, and material handling and pin picking applications were shown, including new robotic warehousing. So I think there's a shift going to happen in robotics and automation, and just the Promat was happening in the U.S. So therefore, my question is to you. You saw a similar change, or let's say, you said the situation in the U.S. market is difficult, but Promat as a fair showed a different expectation or purchasing attitude, or how was the feeling at the fair?
Well, there's a couple of things. So one of the things about the market, by the way, before I go to Promat, just a quick point. Not all robot companies report their data to the IFR or to the A3 over here in the U.S. And North America. So a lot of the growth that's occurred has been in robots companies that have not reported their data, so they don't get picked up in the mainstream data to reflect the growth there. So a lot of cobots, as an example, and a lot of new robot companies that are emerging. The other thing is AMRs or automated.
Oh, really? But Stu, what are new cobot players on the U.S. market? Are these Chinese brands or who is new and not reporting numbers? Sounds very interesting for me to hear this.
Well, even the bigger organizations that have been there historically have not reported their cobot numbers. So Universal traditionally has not in the past, although I understand that may be changing. But certainly the other companies that are coming into North America in the cobot world have not been reporting. The big companies have been. So the Fanix, the ABBs, Yaskawas, those kinds of people, they do, in fact, report their robot numbers for cobots. They just don't break them out. There's not a breakout for cobots. And that's a good thing, frankly, because cobots are just another choice of robots. But AMRs, as an example, there's no reporting of AMRs. So the massive growth in AMRs doesn't get picked up, but clearly there's a huge market there. So anyway, going back to the ProMat thing, the ProMat show in Chicago was very interesting. The number of exhibitors, I think, appeared to be roughly the same, although the exhibitors are showing much larger floor space in their booths to be able to demonstrate their equipment. And the thing I would say that I noticed was that the sophistication and the installation experience and the real-world capabilities of the equipment has all significantly improved. You know, there's still a lot of development work to be done, don't get me wrong, but the stability and the speed and the performance and the business cases, most importantly, are certainly there. And even with humanoids, Digit was on display with Agility Robotics and was a fantastic display in showing that humanoids are coming. And there is, in fact, a business case there for businesses that are running at least two shifts. It's definitely showing up.
Two shifts, you mentioned. Really, two shifts with a humanoid?
Yeah, they said that if you run your business on a two-shift basis at least 5 days a week, that they're able to get payback by using the humanoid Digit, is its name. And the more shifts you run, the more days you run each week, the higher the performance return on investment are.
Okay.
And they have real-life data to support that.
Is it a wheel-based humanoid or is it a foot-based humanoid? What?
It's actually a walking robot. It's a pure quadruped, and it's not a wheel-based robot. And then with some of the wheel-based robots, the paybacks may be a little bit faster if the cycle rate of packing boxes is faster. But yes, it was quite impressive, and it's first time at a show like that you saw the robots really untethered and walking even on a little bit of a non-smooth surface. It was certainly carpeted, but you know, it's walking on cables and other things underneath the carpets just like people do, and they were quite stable and ran pretty well. It was a very interesting display.
So now you're a humanoid fan boy.
Not completely. So to me, for all automation, it's about form factor. What's the right form factor to do the right job? And when you get that form factor worked out, you know, what's the return on investment? Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how cool the technology is. It matters if it makes money. And a lot of companies have just missed the fact that even some fairly simple automation out there can, in fact, make quite a bit of money and is much better investment than other investments they could be making. And the return on investment is proven to be pretty rapid for systems that are properly engineered.
Mm-hmm. But you mentioned this whole political stuff. And is that the only reason why companies not investing in automation as fast as expected?
No, I don't think it's the only reason. I mean, it's a significant reason because there's so much distraction. And a lot of companies are trying to perhaps redesign products to be able to deal with some of the changes, because some of the changes are certainly tariff-based. But there's even some ingredients and color dyes and other things that are being legislated about right now that could, in fact, change the texture or the flavor of their food and beverage and things that they're working on. So there's a lot of work going into that area. But the other element that's occurring is there's a lot of mergers and acquisitions going on. And if you're being acquired, the acquiring company doesn't want you to be spending money, and the company that you're operating in doesn't want to spend money because they're trying to keep the books as clean as possible. And then if you're the acquiring company, money you might have used for a CapEx expenditure on robots winds up becoming an investment and taking over another company. And a lot of the investments that could go for robotic automation perhaps are being pushed towards things like ERP systems or other types of office automation to be able to consolidate these operations. So there's still money being spent, but not necessarily prioritized for robots and robotic automation. And I feel that may be a problem because when you get done with the mergers and acquisitions, you still got to deal with all the inefficiencies. You still got to deal with the lack of manpower. You still got to deal with the quality issues and throughputs and other things that robots can do to help stabilize and improve the performance of the business.
And what do the tariff discussions mean for robotics? Will the systems become more expensive and nobody wants to invest any more in robots?
So it depends on where the robots come from. In the case of China, the answer is yes, robots coming into the U.S. from China would have a higher tariff value on them potentially. And then some of the equipment coming back and forth across the Mexican-Canadian border, again, depending on the tariffs, because tariffs are not necessarily uniform and across the entire robotic ecosystem or what have you. But there's lots of different ways to get things done. And frankly, it's a great time for the European automation companies to be working towards the U.S. because the U.S. dollar continues to be strong. So there's a good exchange rate in euro. The demand is strong, and the demand perhaps in Europe maybe not so strong. So it's not a bad time for European companies particularly to try to make some business in the U.S.
But we are also afraid when it comes to tariffs in the moment.
In some cases, yes. And the tariffs are kind of funny. There's always been some monetary tariffs in there, but what's changing is the rate or the value of those tariffs have changed. And there's no real domestic robot manufacturer, per se, in the United States. Certainly Boston Dynamics and a couple of other smaller companies are based in the U.S., but a significant number of the robotic automation in general is not produced in U.S., because even companies like Adept and other companies used to be U.S. companies are now foreign-owned. In fact, Boston Dynamics is actually owned by Hyundai, so it's now owned by the Koreans.
Yeah, absolutely. And how are robotics companies adapting to this new situation, the end of the boom, which never was there? What do you see?
So a lot of the companies are well established, you know, so the Fanucs and the ABBs, Yaskawas and others are investing in inventory and investing in sales to better promote their markets and are working harder with their integrators to help the integrators develop more robust, more cost-effective solutions. Because at the end of the day, it's still an economics issue as much as anything else. So there's a lot of focus on what can be done. And yeah, there's always constraints. There's always distractions. But you have to get on message and you have to really focus and get back to the basics. And the basics is something that is not just from a technology point of view, but the basics of why are you selling robots in the first place? The basics are, is a good financial tool. So a lot of companies need to shift from being focused on the gee whiz value of the technology or the uniqueness of the technology and focus on the fundamentals of it makes money, it has a return on investment, and that's a big change.
But what you just mentioned, Stu, is it's a good opportunity for Europeans going to the U.S. I just saw, especially smaller companies, German, European startups try to move to the U.S., first of all, because maybe it's good for getting funding on the one hand side, but also to present the newest technology. Do you have the feeling this is valid and it's the right move for European smaller companies, startup, to benefit from the U.S. market? Or you say there are so many startups in the U.S. itself, that's just a price fight?
That's a good question. So there's two aspects to it that we could explore. One is it the right time for them to come to North America? If they're struggling with supporting their market and they're a startup and somewhat fragile in Europe, it's not going to get any easier for them to come to the U.S. because they do have to differentiate against all the other noise of all the other startups that are out there. So there's so much startup activity and there's so much noise about new companies that it distracts the customer. It's harder for the customer to make a decision. The other side of it is that in a down economy or a weakened economy, and when people are getting back to the fundamentals, you may find that some of the companies that could invest in startup companies from a purchasing and deploying the product inside their operations may be reluctant to do so because they're wanting a sure thing, so to speak. They want a safe investment to get their return on investment. And sometimes small startup companies are struggling. Sometimes they struggle with support or delivery, or maybe the solution needs to be finalized a little bit better. So in an economy like today, companies are going to go with more of the safe bet, so to speak, solutions that are proven, that have real-life data. So the other side of that is if the startup does in fact have good, accurate data that's repeatable and they can demonstrate that they're there, then they may be able to find companies that are willing to invest. But they've got to have their story done, and they've got to be able to say, we can support you in the U.S. because the U.S. customer doesn't necessarily want to deal with a six-hour time delay from Europe, or the, you know, getting people stuck at the airport because they can't get into country because their paperwork is not correct, because there's been a big crackdown on immigration papers and work permits and everything else like that. So it's somewhat like COVID. Companies had to source more domestically to avoid issues of travel with COVID, and we're somewhat into that now. So I see that logistics and travel being a big additive risk. So perhaps for a startup company, maybe they need to double down and make sure they have their home market under control before they stretch out their supply line and their support line to come to a sophisticated market like the North American market.
So you are also not a political guy, but you are at the AAA organization, right?
Yeah, the 83, the Association for Advancing Automation.
Yes. Exactly. Do you talk with your senators, with your member of the House, talking about the whole topic when it comes to travel restrictions, when it comes to tariffs? What do you hear from them?
Well, we hear that if everybody has their paperwork in order and they're planned and they don't do crazy things by bringing stuff they shouldn't into the country or whatever, generally most people are getting around fine. The challenge is the news media will find the places where there's been problems and amplify the noise about those problems. But generally speaking, it's not a big deal. I live very close to the Canadian border, only about 50 kilometers. And I go into Canada on a frequent basis to conduct business over there with our colleagues in Canada and vice versa. You know, the trade back and forth between the U.S. and Canada is significant. They're our largest trading partner. Although the emotions are a little bit different because there's a lot of harsh feelings about what's going on in Washington, D.C. at the moment. So the key is, like anything else, a successful company has to learn how to adapt. And you have to find a way to get things done because you just can't go on the sidelines. You'll starve to death. So what, again, going back to the basics, what are the economics that drive a decision and how do you address those economics and minimize the risk for the customer by having your, as they say, T's crossed and I's dotted and all your information properly prepared?
How do you see the coming months, Stu?
So I think the coming months, people will be sorting out the confusion and the indecision. And I think that, like a lot of others, we believe that the third and fourth quarter look pretty good. Demand is still there. The problems are still there. Labor costs are still going up and labor availability is still difficult. People still need to consume and companies still need to be competitive. So a lot of us think that the uncertainty will kind of sort itself out in the next couple of months and people will kind of get back to it. Also has to do a lot with their new products. If their products have been re-engineered to deal with the changes, whether it be ingredients or technology, those redesigns will drive purchases and changes in equipment to be able to get to market. Because at the end of the day, we still got to go get a job done. Mm-hmm.
But you also just mentioned at ProMat, you saw many humanoids going or be ready for production. BMW is ready with Figure. Mercedes-Benz invested in agility. But besides humanoids, what was the most impressing, let's say, technology or solution you saw at ProMat? Is it just standard robotics or were they anything outstanding besides humanoids?
So humanoids was a small part of it, will continue to be a small part for the coming years. And you know, you talk about big companies like BMW or Volkswagen or others, they're going to be the early adopters. They have the money to do so. But the general population's not too much interested in humanoids yet. AMRs are certainly coming of age. I mean, you couldn't go from one booth to the next without falling over another AMR manufacturer. So they're certainly out there. I think the thing that I noticed is the software to control systems and the interface between ERP systems and warehouse management systems and the floor have become much more sophisticated. Barcode scanning and QR code scanning and other types of vision-enabling technologies are certainly there. And AI, especially related to vision and creating large language models or large functional models of products, AI has definitely improved the robustness and performance and speed of vision systems. So I think AI is a reality. I think AI modified software is becoming a reality. I still think there's a lot of work to be done because not all software is easily written out there using AI. But certainly the thought pattern of how do you use computing technologies to push automation forward faster and easier is definitely there. So I think ease of use has significantly improved, and also the experience of the companies have certainly improved, which should make risk for the end user much less and the speed of deployment and adoption much easier.
Stu, it was a pleasure. Thanks for your insight when it comes to the robotics market in USA. All the best for you, your company, and your customers. Greetings to the USA.
Thanks. It's great to talk to you guys again.
Thanks, Helmut. Bye-bye.
Stu, pleasure talking to you. Thank you.